Mr. Banner. Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Captain. I'm always angry.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, WKRP. Got kinda tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be, just maybe think of me once in a while.
Mr. McGee! Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yes, we hope you like us when we're angry. I'm Dean Karyanis.
And I'm Owen Moogan. Welcome back to the Angry History Show, Thanksgiving edition. We're doing a Thanksgiving show, Dean.
Yes, it's pretty great.
It's exciting. It is. You know, and as we kind of produce more content for your listening pleasure, we're going to start pegging shows to the calendar a bit more, like we did with our Christmas episode. So look forward to things like our Arbor Day 7-hour spectacular. That's going to be awesome.
And we're going to interview some trees.
Yeah, we are. A couple of Ents, tree beard. It's going to take a long time because they don't do things at anything other than their own speed. But this is Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving is a holiday with a long history, dating back to the first pilgrim celebration in 1621 with Squanto and the Wampanoag tribe, a name meaning people of the dawn.
Yes, they're from the east in the what's now the New England area anyway, and so that's also the first light, the people of the first light. And since we're talking about Thanksgiving traditions of the past, let's hit one from our living memory of the past, our 70s childhood in the New York City area. Back in the days when we had just a handful of TV channels, and as impossible as this is for today's children to believe, TV went off at night. If you stayed up after that last Star Trek and Twilight Zone, it just went off. You could turn it on, but it was just static.
That's right.
You would get nothing.
Or if you were Carol Ann, then you'd get something, but most of us.
No internet.
Jenny. Sorry.
70s childhood meant no internet, no DVDs, no VHS, or even beta. We had, though, WWOR, Channel 9, which gave kids like us a precious, precious gift. Monster movie marathons for the holidays.
Thursday afternoon, see three of the screen's greatest thrillers, starting at 1 with the greatest of them all, the one and only original King Kong. Then the action continues with The Son of Kong, followed by The Mighty Joe Young, a classic tale of Beauty and the Beast. A full afternoon of action and adventure, Thursday afternoon at 1.
Something for which we were truly thankful. I mean, seriously thankful. I mean, you talk about not having any of these things we take for granted now, you know, just this content on demand all the time. And it was like, wow, okay, Thanksgiving Day would be what? It would be Mighty Joe Young, then like King Kong versus Godzilla, which was always the freaky King Kong. He was like the crazy, extremely physically ugly King Kong. He was disgusting looking. He looked nothing like the Cooper King Kong. And then Son of Kong. The ratings actually for these, I think that started like in 76 or so. And the ratings were for that 76 Thanksgiving marathon were good enough for WOR. I just keep calling it Channel 9 in my head and get used to it.
Yeah, sure.
Million Dollar Movie. Da-na-na-na. I didn't realize until I was in my 20s that the theme to the Million Dollar Movie was actually the theme to Gone with the Wind. But what the hell do I know? The ratings were actually good enough for Channel 9 to include the day after Thanksgiving into the monster movie lineup. And this is when it got awesome. Give it a listen.
Tomorrow afternoon, starting at 1, WOR-TV presents a full afternoon of action and adventure. Jack Palance stars in Godzilla vs. the Cosmic Monster, followed by Godzilla vs. Megalon, and then Godzilla takes on the Smog Monster.
Over the next few years, the same movies were aired on Thanksgiving Day, but the movies the day after varied. And nowadays, we've all had the experience as an adult. You wake up, you think you have to go into work on a Saturday, and then you realize right. You don't, or vice versa, which is even worse. You think it's a Saturday, and you have to go into work. But in those days, when you were a kid, if you woke up on a Sunday morning and thought that it was a Saturday morning, there was no more disappointing feel than turning on the TV and seeing that there were no cartoons.
Awful.
You'd be stuck watching Davy and Goliath, which was an adorable show, but you could only watch so many of them. You know, little claymation boy and his dog with, I didn't want to learn a lesson on my Sunday morning.
No. Yeah.
Grandma's with God now, Davy.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you though, I want to interject very briefly. When we were, okay, so growing up in Brooklyn, Archdiocese of Brooklyn, Bishop McGovernoe was our big bishop when I was a kid. And if I'm not mistaken, Davy and Goliath, I think it was either a Lutheran show or an Episcopalian show. But when they ran it on Sunday morning in Catholicsville in Brooklyn, they inserted a shot into the open. And I'll never forget this. Bishop McGovernoe swinging a couple of children around in the schoolyard. It was like, okay, cool, Catholic stamp, move on. You can watch this. But yeah, odd little bit of local updating to the TV. Go ahead, Dean. Sorry.
Yeah, I believe it was the Lutherans back then. Yeah, now that you mention it. Recently, I think just in the last couple of months, there was a news story that it was the first Saturday in however many years that there was no cartoons on Saturday morning, because now kids can get them whenever they want. It's a tradition, I guess, that's gone by the wayside, like a lot of them.
It is. It's such a strange thing.
But back in those days of Jerry Ford, all these movies were played. Godzilla versus the Cosmic Monster, Son of Godzilla, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, a personal favorite of mine, of when he rips off the claw and starts clapping it back and forth together, you know? Go, Godzilla! Godzilla versus Megalon.
Yep. Godzilla versus mom's special friend who wanted you to call him Uncle Godzilla. They only aired that at night, though. Very strange. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that would have been a good one for what is now called Black Friday.
Yeah.
And that was the day retailers long hoped to see their ledgers go into the black for the year. That's where the name comes from. A lot of people don't happen to know that. Shortly after the 1985 program, Channel 9 lost the broadcast rights to the RKO library. So they could no longer broadcast Mighty Joe Young, King Kong, and Son of Kong. I guess all those gorillas had the same agent.
Yes. You're going to be huge. You're going to be a giant star. And then, as soon as they love you, mankind is going to hunt you down and kill you. Come on, say yes.
Came in here with his bananas and his monkey charm.
That's right. Mighty Joe Young never gets that picture. It's perfect for him. I love you, Dean. Go ahead.
Why, thank you. I'm thankful for you. Such a call.
Here's the kind of movie you're waiting to see as John Ford and Marion C. Cooper present Mighty Joe Young, whose sensational exploits will startle you, thrill you, electrify you with hair-raising excitement and suspense. See Mighty Joe Young as he savagely resists capture in his native Africa.
Oh! Joe!
See the most fantastic relationship between beast and beauty. A mere girl mastering a primitive giant. See Mighty Joe Young, enraged by Hollywood pranksters, destroy Filmland's swankiest nightclub on a fabulous Sunset Strip.
Mighty Joe Young.
The picture that's alive with the most sensational action thrills ever filmed.
Mightier than King Kong, Mighty Joe Young.
I have vivid memories of watching those at my grandmother's house, my yayarara in Fort Lee. She would let us go into her room and watch it on her TV with one of those remote controls with a piece of metal inside. And of course, we were kids. Remember that? Kong, 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 kong. It did two things. And, you know, of course, you would take it apart if you were any kind of a mechanical person and then shoot them at your cousins. So
that's
that was
right.
A lot of fun. Yeah, sure. And going back to what we said about not having VHS and DVD, this is going to sound so sad, but I vividly remember that I would record those on a tape, just a regular audio tape. And when there were parts where they weren't talking, I would narrate into the tape recorder and say what was happening so that I could watch some of it later.
That is awesome. That is that, my friends, that is fanboy dedication from an earlier era. No doubt. That's all. My brother John and I used to do that with comic books. Remember, like, the annuals for comic books used to be huge. Mm-hmm. There was some like crazy Silver Age Flash one, and John and I were reading it into the cassette, and I remember my line was, "Where did you come from?" And John, no longer playing along, said, "I came from my mother's womb." And then we stopped doing it. I think I hit him in the head with a dart.
I have to roll here a quick clip.
Okay.
Nothing to do with Thanksgiving other than things we're thankful for, one of which being the fantastic comedy of Bill Murray. And you just reminded me of when he briefly in the 70s voiced the Human Torch.
That's right.
It's very obscure.
And pre-SNL.
Yeah.
It's mid-afternoon in New York City. Through the din of midday traffic is heard a strange explosion. A symbol takes shape in the city's sky, and a legend is born at Swanson's garage.
Well, we got her purring like a lamb, Johnny boy.
Good, that's the way it should be. There's only one thing I like better than working on cars.
What's that? Hey, look.
What's that in the sky?
That's my cue. Flame on.
Hey, Johnny, what's happening to you?
Remember me saying there's only one thing I like better than working on cars? Well, this is it.
I'm a human torch.
Certainly something to be thankful for. And without it's the quality of the voice. Like, it changes, but it just comes through so much, even in that age and that time where this was just a job, I'm sure, that he just picked up and figured he'd give it a shot. And he was probably that brief performance. This is not to be a suck up or anything, but he's hard to get the Human Torch right.
Right.
So I think that was just that sense of wonder and sort of his, you know, not being that jerky race car driver that I think he becomes one dimensional a little later. I mean, it's one of the reasons they canceled it, that and they're fighting right with Fox over the rights. So
yeah, exactly. Oh gosh, I know. But that is so weird though, having Fox is trying to get this rebooting their Fantastic Four again, and at the same time Marvel goes, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to cancel that now. And I can tell you, I bet if it was in Marvel's hands, they would not be canceling Fantastic Four. As a matter of fact, it'd probably be bigger than it ever was. But you know, Fox has a history of dealing with its sci-fi franchises this way. But that's neither here nor there. Back to Thanksgiving we were talking about, weren't we? Or is this Arbor
Day? Yes, we were. We absolutely were talking about Thanksgiving. Here we were being thankful for the Avengers movies. We're thankful for all the things Bill Murray does.
But so back to this Thanksgiving of our youth. You go back even further in time for those of you, I don't know, not fortunate enough to be a kid with a president named Jerry. Days of Thanksgiving were common from the infancy of the American Republic. And following Congress's recommendation, President Washington issued a proclamation in Tiny Town in New York City, then the nation's capital, that designated Thursday, November 26th, 1789, as a day of public thanksgiving, the first such celebration under the new Constitution, and plenty to be thankful for. Absolutely, then.
Yeah, Washington, not the least among it, in his leadership and his greatness as the first president, the one man, the indispensable man who could unify all those separate states. And later we had the Civil War, and that period saw Thanksgiving transform from a regional holiday held on random days based on your state into a single national holiday. There's a lot of symbolism there, of course. That's exactly what the war did to the country as a whole. We went from these United States and the United States are to the United States is, the way we talk about it now, as one single united country. New Englanders, descendants of those same pilgrims and the Wampanoag tribe, always gave thanks for an abundant autumn harvest, and governors issued proclamations like Washington's basically whenever the mood struck or whenever they felt that they were really having a great time of the harvest. And I would bet also for sort of some political reasons when they wanted to look like they were really good and in touch with the people.
Sure.
But anyway, there was no single day coast to coast. We didn't have a coast, I guess. Or we only had one coast at that point of national Thanksgiving. So
coast to river.
Yeah. So at the point of the Civil War, then we have, okay, we have California. We have all those West Coast territories. And so we had a woman who decided she wanted to create this national day. She thought this would be a unifying force. So tell us about her.
Yeah, this was a New Hampshire author, Sarah Josepha Hale, and she lobbied Congress and five presidents to make the holiday a reality. She was coming up snake eyes until she found a sympathetic ear in President Lincoln, and the great emancipator saw the symbolic value of the celebration. And on October 3rd, 1863, he declared the last Thursday in November to be regularly commemorated as Thanksgiving Day.
His proclamation implored, quote, the almighty hand to heal the wounds of the nation and to restore peace, harmony, and tranquility and union. Now, although the Constitution, as we all know and hear, often prohibits the establishment of a religion, you'll notice when you read these early on, I mean, it really strikes you one way or the other, I guess, that presidents like Lincoln and Washington, honestly, I look at it as they just weren't that uptight. They understood and they trusted, I think, people to understand that they didn't have one secular view of their own, or they didn't have one sect, rather, of their own that they believed in. You know, they weren't like James Garfield, who was a pastor and became president.
Right.
They didn't have this view, but they understood that that was part of the national fabric. And so they always included a lot of this religious imagery in there in a non-sectarian way. And I often wonder what they would think if they heard today, people grabbing them and citing them, or people shunning them or whatever, when they probably were just thinking, this is the natural thing to do. And I'm sure that the tribes felt the same way. They were thanking somebody, you know, they were just trying to be humble.
They weren't thanking us after a while, that's for sure.
They were just trying to be humble and, you know, appreciate it. Yeah, well, we'll get to
that. Right. And also, you know, the idea of having to thank someone, you know, what the founders didn't, not that they would have been anti it, but the diversity we enjoy now, most of us enjoy now, this wasn't as diverse a country then, you know, and the you didn't have a a large atheist voice or agnostic voice or alternate voice. He certainly didn't have a large Jewish voice or Muslim voice to be part of these early stages of cementing these traditions. But anyway,
as far as not having a voice, I think another thing was everybody didn't have a voice who had Twitter, because there was no Twitter and there was no Facebook and there was nobody. They were busy trying not to be eaten by wolverines or, you know, get out of Philadelphia before the annual yellow fever season killed thousands and thousands of people. So they seemed to be a little bit more focused on important things. And maybe that's what made them thankful and made them focus on larger issues.
Sure. But our Thanksgivings took a step back in 1939, 40, and 41, the year of two Thanksgivings, or Franksgiving, named for FDR. In an effort to boost retail sales in the later years of the Great Depression, FDR moved the holiday a week early, so it wouldn't fall on November 30th of 39. And if you watch the 1942 Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire film Holiday Inn, you'll see an animated turkey running between the two dates on the calendar in confusion before shrugging at the audience. It's probably the first and only bird to ever break the fourth wall. Although I think Tweety may have done that once or twice. That's an interesting little nugget, though. You see that you want to talk about, you want to get a sense of what things were like in popular culture and society at the time. That's a great little example, as you can see in Holiday Inn. So
yeah, and people talk now about how ad nauseum, I mean, as long as I can remember, about people don't get along and they do this and that. I mean, look at the map that we always see of the red states and blue states. Imagine them not even being able to agree on Thanksgiving. At least we agree on Thanksgiving now. We're better than you, 1939 people. We can finally look down on the past about a random thing like that.
Oh no, don't worry. By next year, we'll be at each other's throats over Thanksgiving. it's coming.
Move it to July or something.
Or just move it away from, you know, anything that anyone likes, and it's just going to be nothing but hatred and blah, 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 and no one's going to have the tryptophan. And speaking of which,
this is a happy
I'm more optimistic than this, folks. I'm much more optimistic than this in general.
This is happy. Didn't we get all that out of our system in the Hindenburg? Talk about not having anything to be thankful for. Blaming blimps did not fall on me. But people were not happy back then in 39. As an illustration of just what wasn't known about Hitler yet, FDR's opponent for the presidency casually said the change was forced on the nation like an omnipotent Hitler.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what it was like. That's exactly what it was like. Just like a Hitler.
Yeah, it was like that weird goose-stepping guy over there. They didn't know all the horrors at this point, I suppose. But it still seems shocking. I can't imagine a candidate today comparing any president to Hitler out loud like that. Sure, they have all their little underlings and people on Twitter do it and start photoshopping mustaches on the president, whoever he may be.
Exactly.
And, you know, today they probably feel like you're not really anybody until you've been compared to Hitler.
That's And you know, this is, what do they call that? God winning? It's like someone God winning the national thread back in the 30s. Way to go. Way to go. Very proud of you in retrospect. Goodness gracious.
And I don't know why, though, because the Senate never ratified that Godwin's law. So I don't know exactly how it became law, but it sure seems to be on the internet a lot.
Yeah, it really does.
By 1941, of course, the nation had more important things to worry about than the war over Thanksgiving, which was a real war.
Yeah, an actual real global conflict. But after the war, we start to get into another Thanksgiving tradition, and this is namely the turkey pardon. And one of the many legends about Lincoln, other than that he had a secretary named Kennedy, is that he pardoned his son Tad's pet turkey. Another myth traces the tradition back to President Truman. And while it's true that the National Turkey Federation presented its first turkey to Truman, it was in response to his Poultryless Thursdays initiative and not a bit of political theater. Poultryless Thursdays. And that really rolls off the tongue, too. Whoever did that probably would not go far in the branding world today. It's Poultryless Thursdays. Yeah, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks. Smooth.
Sounds great. Yeah. No chicken for you.
How about chicken Thursdays?
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't rhyme with anything. I don't know.
No.
They had a really hard time. No alliteration, nothing.
No.
You know, or weekend, maybe. No, that doesn't work. Web, feet, something.
Hashtag Poultryless Thursdays.
You know, you mentioned that thing about that myth, rather, about Lincoln having a secretary named Kennedy, which, of course, he did not. And it reminded me that last night I was out to dinner. I was at Ted's across from the office there at Radio City. And the waiter's name was Lincoln. And, you know, it's your basic restaurant. It's a nice bar and it has, you know, a bunch of little booths there. And so I said, hey, our waiter's name is Lincoln. He must be really nervous with all these booths behind him.
Oh, boy. You know what? I was going to say too soon, but it's not.
I said, you must get that all the time. He said, no, never, ever.
No, I guess you never do.
Oh, yeah, like, watch your back, man.
Right. Did you introduce him to your American cousin?
Yeah. Don't go to the theater. Someone offers you tickets. Don't. For the love of God, go.
Yeah. There's a Godzilla marathon on Friday. Just stay home and watch that. Oh, man. But, well, sorry.
This brings us to 1948 after my horrible joke. But see, now the thing about an episode like this is you can do those cheesy TV radio tricks where everything you do, you just say, well, I'll be thankful for my horrible jokes about brutal presidential assassins and waiters, and you're fine. You know, you're just going to hopefully continue to listen and hopefully indulge us. So, but it's true. And 1948, Truman accepted the two gifted birds given to him. This goes back to the myth that he started the pardoning.
Right.
He didn't. He just said thank you and responded that they would come in handy for Christmas dinner. So he clearly had no intention of sending them to a petting zoo.
No.
Turkey Federation suggested a pardon when they presented birds to the next president, John F. Kennedy, but that was just sort of in their press release literature. JFK said only that he wouldn't personally eat the bird, leaving open the possibility that somebody else would. I don't know whatever happened. There's probably 7 books written out there about conspiracy theories about the turkeys. Maybe they were switched or whatnot. But anyway, they did not pardon the birds.
Right. Single giblet theory. Yes, it's a... upsetting for all of us. But of course, you know, you can consult the writings of President Kennedy's secretary named Lincoln, and we'll get the full story there. But it sounds incredibly recent for a tradition that seems so old, you know. But it was actually an offhand remark by President Reagan that first introduced the official term pardon to the fun. And it was his successor, President George H.W. Bush 41, who formalized the tradition in 1989. And that was President Bush's first White House Thanksgiving. And here he is officiating at the ceremony for his last in 1992. Give a listen.
Nice to see you, Howie. It's good to see you. Thank you, kids. Thank you very much. Please be seated. And let me just say, I want to welcome all of you. Certainly Mr. Cuddy, who's the president of the Federation, National Turkey Federation, Stuart Proctor, the executive vice president, and I want to especially welcome all the kids from Kent Gardens Elementary. Now, where are you? Hold up your hair. They are right over this group. Good. Amadon Elementary? Yep. Holy Cross. And maybe some strays out there from other schools, but everyone is really welcome. And of course, the special guest of honor, the bird over here. I hope you guys have seen him. After participating in this ceremony year after year, I've come to learn a little about the turkey. For instance, it's hand-fed, it gets lots of personal attention, and it's overweight. And reminds me of Ranger, who you may have seen running around here, our dog. We've been trying to avoid a confrontation between the turkey and our Springer. But I want to set the guests at ease and especially tell the kids something. After all, this turkey represents America's 45 million turkeys who will begin making their irreplaceable contribution to our Thanksgiving celebration. So take it easy, turkey. We're just here to serve you. And we all know that Thanksgiving is more than just an occasion to stuff yourself. It's a uniquely American holiday, a time for remembering all the good things that we've been given, or asking ourselves what good we can find to do. And after all, only America would set aside a special holiday just for the purpose of giving thanks. George Washington, in the first Presidential Thanksgiving Day proclamation, spoke of, and here's the quotation, the duty to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. Well, this turkey must have said some prayers of his own, and we're going to grant him a special presidential pardon. He will be going into early retirement, I'm told, living out his years on a Virginia children's farm. I want to thank all of you for being here on this special occasion. Welcome all our new friends to the White House, and God bless you, and may you have a happy Thanksgiving.
I want to point out one final thing about the turkey pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, it's a scam.
What?
It is a total scam. Not that they're secretly eating them. Not that the turkeys aren't real, not that it's the same turkey year after year wearing a fake mustache, but the presidents all give us this standard platitudes, and as people love to say, both parties do it, about the birds living out their lives at a petting zoo. Well, what they don't tell us is those lives are shorter than the wild ones that Benjamin Franklin wanted to immortalize as our national bird.
That's right.
And I have a bunch of those around here. And let me tell you, they fly. They will go out of a tree if you startle them. They will go after you. They're loud. They're gentle as far as I've seen, but I've never wanted to really make one mad. You're talking about the ones for those of you out there who drink, which I'm sure is none of you.
Yeah.
The wild turkey bottle turkey, that's what they look like.
I was going to say, you said that they fly. The only sort of flying wild turkeys I've seen have been through like a window or, you know, after a very rough Saturday evening. I'm not doing this again. Shut up. Don't look at me. Kennedy had a secretary named Van Buren. Sorry.
Owen, you should be thankful for your therapy.
For what?
And?
Yeah, I'm thankful for everything. Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of those wild turkeys here in Bergen County
that fly
around.
Yep.
Yeah, we do. I send you pictures of them often. You know, they come out of my door and they're big. The little ones are so cute. They follow them around and they can fly, which is an important thing to remember for later. But we in the animal husbandry bag know that domestic turkeys, they'll mature in just a few months, really. They're not made to live as long as the wild ones. Like, I had one that I named Ralph because he would perch right in the tree outside our bed and window and do the at 4 a.m, which I sleep through anything. Yeah, my wife wasn't too happy, but it was there. And so he would always come out there, Ralph. And one day I was going to the airport about 5 a.m. I dropped someone off and came back and it was still dark. And I said to my wife, look up in the tree. And you could see just this little ball of Ralph, like just his silhouette. It was it was dark, you know, his head tucked peacefully under his wing and everything is quiet all around. And I look up to him and I went at the top of my lungs like a lunatic. And you see his head pop up and he's looking around. And how do you like it, you crazy Ralph? So, yeah,
the
authorities came. The authorities came, but it was so worth it.
Oh, totally. That's all right. 3 days of psychiatric hold, totally worth it.
I showed him.
Yeah, you did.
As I said, they don't live as long in captivity and not bred to as the ones that are in the wild. For example, the pair that President Clinton pardoned in 1999 died before reaching a year and a half old. I believe that Speaker Gingrich at the time wanted to have a special prosecutor to look into the turkey's death, but yeah, they agreed that they were just sort of
exactly.
So this papered over, you know, it just happens. You know, 18 months, that's not long, right? Yeah.
Well, it's food. They're bred to be food. It's like, you know, it's like someone's going to pardon that piece of liverwurst. You know, it's don't bother. It's meant to be eaten. Sorry, everyone. Well, that's uplifting.
Yeah, you would just have to completely stop breeding them, I guess. Which some people do want to do.
Yeah. But you know what?
Have tofurkey.
Tofurkey.
Really?
You know what? You know what? I am... Eat what you want. Go for it. I'm not down on this notion of vegetarianism or veganism. Go for it. Enjoy yourself. But don't shape it like meat food. Make it like something else. I don't want to eat this thing that's supposed to look like meat. Give it to me, you know, in its natural, awesome, delicious state. Don't make it look like it's better. It's not good. Anyway, but we're talking about holidays. And, you know, what is any holiday without some sort of depressing reflection? And in that spirit, we have a clip from everyone's favorite animated nihilist, Charlie Brown. After the Christmas special blew the doors off the ratings, Chuck and the Peanuts gang started showing up at more family dinners. The Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special opens with our hero, as always in those days before email, checking his mailbox when his sister Sally and her crush Linus happen upon him. Give a listen.
What's the matter, big brother?
Nothing. I was just checking the mailbox.
What did you expect? A turkey card?
Holidays always depress me.
I know what you mean. I went down to buy a turkey tree. And all they have are things for Christmas.
For Christmas? Already?
Anyway, why should I give thanks on Thanksgiving? What have I got to be thankful for? All it does is make more work for us at school. Do you know what we have to do now? We have to write an essay on Stanley Miles.
You mean Miles Standish?
I can't keep track of all those people.
What's all the commotion?
We've got another holiday to worry about. It seems Thanksgiving Day is upon us.
I haven't even finished eating all my Halloween candy!
Sally, Thanksgiving is a very important holiday. Ours was the first country in the world to make a national holiday to give thanks.
Isn't he the cutest thing?
Charlie.
Today, Sally would have to go and undergo sexual harassment counseling.
Yes, yes, she would. Yes, she would.
Because Linus clearly made it clear he did not want any part of her affections.
Nope.
And Charlie Brown would be on Ritalin, some kind of watch list, certainly. I mean, think about it. Thanksgiving depresses him. Christmas depresses him. Don't even get him started on Valentine's Day.
No.
Can you imagine him on Super Bowl Sunday?
Oh,
it just brings back all those painful memories of how often he fell for Lucy and the football trick. It just has such a difference in tone from today's cartoons where they just, we were talking about Batman before we went on air and you watching it with your son.
So does that surprise anyone, by the way, that we were talking about Batman? Probably not.
Well, what was it you said? You said something about the high schools, right? And the high school was a very adult joke that kids wouldn't get.
Well, yeah, it was Joker had infiltrated the high school to try to, you know, undermine the sort of school spirit of these kids. And it's Robin's high school. It's Woodrow Roosevelt High School. And I think the big basketball game that weekend was Woodrow Roosevelt versus Disco Tech, which is very funny. I laughed.
That's something that would keep adults watching. And
absolutely.
I think they didn't talk down in a lot of these. And as we talked about in the Christmas episode, there was concern that it was too adult and that it had too blatantly Christian messages, the Christmas show. But you know, you get what you wanted out of those, and they're great because you can watch them again. I don't think that any of the kids today are going to want to really go back and watch a lot of these cartoons that are made for the very young the way that we did. I mean, heck, what do we know? We grew up watching Bugs Bunny. We didn't know all the adult things, right?
Well, no,
you can enjoy them later.
Absolutely right. I think we've talked about this before. You know, even my feeling watching them, especially Bugs, was that I knew that there were parallel tracks while I was watching it. And like there were certainly jokes that I wasn't getting, but I understood even then that it was a multi-layered thing. And of course, you know, the older I got, which is why they're still effing hilarious and they still work, you know? But this brings us to this whole thing about the children of today versus then. And it's more of a reflection on parents than anything else. It's there's a story in Monday's Washington Post. We're actually recording this a week before Thanksgiving. Because, you know, we're trying to be efficient. But this piece was about parental anxiety, about their children facing the real world challenges. And absolutely, it's a challenging world, a bit of a scary place, you know, all these last bunch of years. And we're not talking about, you know, shooting to space like we were in our last episode. We're talking about things like even like seeing someone ride a bike without a helmet, you know, which is one of the things in the old Sesame Street episodes that earned those DVDs a warning label. I mean, they actually have like warning labels for Sesame Street now, you know, saying that the social mores of the time were different than they are today. And please be warned that, you know, Mr. Hooper died.
What?
He did. And they addressed it.
What?
Crying out loud. Can you imagine them even doing that now?
What?
I couldn't.
Mr. Hooper, what?
No, Mr. Hooper died.
Mr. Hooper died?
Whoa.
The kindly store owner?
Hold on. I'm kidding. I was saying theoretically.
Oh.
Lee is still alive. Gosh. Yes, he's actually 108 years old now, Dean. Don't worry, he's fine.
Explain why he stopped sending me Christmas cards, but I just thought he was busy.
Yeah, he was very, very busy. Yes, he was busy seeing... Busy with his... I'm sorry, go ahead. He was just busy.
Just such a weird... Like, who watches those cartoons of the whole or live puppet show, as it is the case with Sesame Street, and looks for these things? I just don't think that had such a voice and such a power. I think they designed it with a different thing in mind. Like, I don't know who looked at Snuffleupagus and thought, we can't have him be invisible anymore because it's weird. And I don't think we could have... I don't know how we had somebody say... We have a character called Cookie Monster. Whoa.
Yeah, slow down.
He really likes cookies a little bit too much.
Yes.
What? That's why he's a Cookie Monster.
Yes. Well, originally he was LSD Monster.
Yeah.
They changed it.
They're the googly eyes. That's how he got those.
The googly eyes. I think about actually Snuffleupagus. I think there was actually something in there that actually made a bit of sense. And I think it had to do with this notion of, you know, the whole big conceit was that no one believed Big Bird when he told them about Snuffy, right? And I think that sort of was the idea of guarding against that. If a kid tells you something, you know, God forbid something horrible happened and I'm telling you this, and then you say, oh, I don't believe you. The kid's not going to want to tell you. But so I think maybe that was part of Snuffy. But there are degrees, you know.
Yeah. But lots of kids have imaginary friends. I don't know how they deal with it today. But
I
don't know. I don't remember ever identifying with Big Bird on that level. I know he was supposed to be a kid, but oh, well. We're still thankful for Sesame Street and the fine people at the Children's Television Workshop.
Me too. And I still have my imaginary friend, by the way, Captain Howdy. He wants to say hello. Okay, sorry. Captain Howdy was from The Exorcist. That was her imaginary friend before.
Speaking of that Washington Post article, our friend and voiceover man, author Don Winston.
Don Winston, the voice of angry history. Love that guy.
You listen to his reads there in the
branding
episode on the Straw Hat Riots, right? Yeah. And for the ones coming up, you were in the booth with him last night.
Yeah, he actually laid a bunch of stuff down for us last night, which is awesome, before he heads out for his Thanksgiving.
He emailed us this scathing take on the lunacy of this article that this article in the Washington Post describes from Laura, a guest writer at a website called bacononthebookshelf.com. The piece reads, quote, "At Oberlin College, administrators urged professors to put trigger warnings on all class material that might disrupt a student's learning or cause trauma, including anything that depicts racism, classism, sexism, and other issues of privilege and oppression. Some examples: The Great Gatsby, trigger warning, suicide, domestic abuse, and graphic violence. Mrs. Dalloway, trigger warning, suicide. The Merchant of Venice, trigger warning, anti-Semitism." And I'm sure you could come up with a ton of these on your own.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And Don's two thoughts were enough to spark a trigger warning of their own. He said, "I now realize my only mission as a writer is to cause as much trauma as possible. I might start adding trigger warnings on all my covers." You know, it's the thing. Parenting is difficult. Yes. And it's, you know, what does it say about the Peace Corps? The toughest job you'll ever love. But yes. And there's a lot on your back and there's a lot to do and there's a lot to sift through. But this sort of thing, this seems like this is not where the problem is. You know, kids can
take
it.
Well, and those are college kids. These are college kids.
These are adults.
I mean, I think the kids at Apex Tech, as much as people like to make fun of them, speaking of the 70s, is, you know, act like it's not important. I don't think that you get to have those tools if you can't figure out, you know,
well, listen,
these things are
if you're
not
responsible enough to be able to handle oxyacetylene welding, plasma cutting, and TIG, you should be able to deal with Mrs. Galloway. Mrs. Dalloway.
Yep.
Damn it. I never read it, obviously. anyway. But
speaking of that sane world of the 70s,
mm-hmm.
we had a voice of reason
the
1970s, for people like this.
Right?
Hmm? Yes, 1970s.
Okay, sorry.
Very funny. Because Dean is actually talking about a current century.
Yeah, and I thought you were just looking back to, we're going to start getting into, you know, gold standard arguments in a few minutes.
Rutherford B. Hayes, Thanksgiving.
Yes.
It usually took the form of Linus Van Pelt did this voice of reason. A Charlie Brown Christmas, it fell to the boy in his security blanket to explain the real history of that holiday. And the same was with Thanksgiving when Linus put it all in perspective.
In the year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians and a great abundance of food. Governor William Bradford and Captain Miles Standish were honored guests. Elder William Brewster, who was a minister, said a prayer that went something like this: "We thank God for our homes and our food and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world for freedom and justice."
I love Linus's voice. It's so funny, it's so wise to make him the guy to sort of get these messages out, because it's, you know, he was always the closet thinker on those shows. But anyway, that's Linus's history, which of course descends from those English pilgrims. But as is often the case with historic events, there are different views, strong opinions, controversy. That's the way it is, right? That's the way it should be. Smallpox wiped out Squanto's tribe, for example. He was kidnapped into slavery, which is how he learned English. The old world's diseases took a massive toll on the Wampanoag that broke bread with the pilgrims. But they endure and are even working to resurrect their language, you know, which, like so many native tongues, is no longer spoken. You know, that's what happens when you get conquered.
Yeah, the disease, obviously no defense against it. And
No.
We wondered what their view of this holiday would be. That specific tribe, I mean, focusing on one narrow slice of it. There's the MashpeeWampanoagTribe.com website, mm-hmm. and there, Tribal Council Chairman Cedric Cromwell, who also goes by a native name that translates as Running Bear, wrote the following: "Dear tribal family, as you know, each November our people are faced with a challenging question. Is Thanksgiving a time of celebration or mourning? I've come to realize that this is not an either-or question. It's both. Historically, Thanksgiving represents our first encounter with the eventual erosion of our sovereignty, and there's nothing wrong with mourning that loss. Why don't you pick up the rest, Owen?"
Okay. In fact, as long as we don't wallow in regret and resentment, it's healthy to mourn. It is a necessary part of the healing process. Still, though our sovereign nation may not be exactly where we would like to see it today, we are still here, striving for something better for our people. To see the wheel of history begin to slowly turn in our favor is something to be thankful for and celebrate. And I believe we are in the midst of a renaissance. Our new tribal community and government center is a far cry from the trailers we used to cram ourselves into. Today we have plenty of space, all the modern amenities, and more importantly, committed individuals filling the offices, working hard to serve our citizenship every day. And for that, I am thankful, end quote. You know what? A very graceful statement. I can't imagine. I can imagine why some people may not, a lot of people may not be down with what this guy is saying regardless.
The statement goes on. This is not the whole thing, but we wanted to sample quite a bit of it because it's a voice that you probably don't hear anywhere else.
I think you hear
a lot of people who have a stamp version of it one way or the other. This is, think how long ago 1621 was. A lot of stuff has happened since then. And think about how little everybody knew about things like disease and first contacts and all of this that was happening at the time. It was a much more brutal society for everybody. Everybody is just trying to survive. And we talked before about one of the reasons they cite religious liberty in the Constitution and the attitude that Washington had. And probably they didn't want to squash it either, because that's why the Pilgrims came here. So that's probably why they didn't want to get involved with saying nothing, because that was important to people. We bumped in there with WKRP in Cincinnati, and I think of Cincinnati, that was Washington's example. You go, you serve, and then you return home to your farm. And a lot of presidents followed that. Martin Van Buren has a great farm you can still visit in Kinderhook today. Mm-hmm. And you know, he wasn't a general, but you served and you went home. And that was one of those unique things about the American Republic, that they wanted to make the exception of the rest of the world, where a guy like Washington got in there and just set himself up for life as king and did whatever he wanted. And so it's something I think that's definitely food for thought, and maybe a little Googling after the Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah, maybe. It's like Dean said, and suggested by all this, you know, we're certainly not trying to make light of or gloss over what is an extremely complex issue, which, gosh, has extremely deep veins running through it. So, but I think we're about to move on to something for which I know Dean is extremely thankful, and not just during the Thanksgiving season.
Yes, next up.
If the big pile of emails that I had, if I were to do one certain search term in all our years as friends, and if I were to put WKRP in there, it's probably the heaviest reference. Probably, you know, somewhere between Star Trek, Hitler, and...
Oh, thanks.
No, I mean, anyway, go ahead, take it away.
You make me sound like Gene Roddenberry. Well, you're really exaggerating, but a lot of things when you work in radio remind you of WKRP, and a lot of the personalities, a lot of the ways that they banter, they try to do these promotions, which leads us to the TV Thanksgiving tradition, the legendary WKRP episode, Turkeys Away. As much as you're making me sound like I'm obsessive about it, I just learned that WKRP was supposed to be a joke. It was supposed to be C-R-A-P, W-K-R-P, supposed to be, yeah. So, see, I don't know that much about it. But Turkey's Away, I do annually watch.
Yep.
And the concept came from an episode where Mr. Carlson is the station manager. And they just switched over, and he feels kind of useless. They changed formats from news to rock and roll.
I love it.
And he's an older guy. Gordon Jump plays him.
Yeah.
Of course, we all love Gordon Jump, the Maytag repairman. Some of you may remember him as.
And he also ran a bicycle store. He was forced to leave New York. I guess he ended up in Cincinnati. But continue.
very special episode of Different Strokes. And that's TV. It's its best. We just talked about kids not believing maybe Snuffleupagus and concern over that.
Right.
That was really pretty intense TV. As much as we joke about it now, I still find that very disturbing. He played this bicycle owner that
it was molest.
Inappropriate, I guess.
Yeah, molests Arnold and what the hell was the other kid's name? I had to trade off that memory for something else.
Dudley.
And that was actually probably, you know, if you hear this hackneyed term, a very special episode of. That actually was, because it was trying to get something important across for the kids. But
yeah.
Anyway, back to KRP.
Yeah, so Mr. Carlson, the out-of-touch station manager, the DJs ask him for his opinion on whether to give away Boston or Foreigner t-shirts, and Mr. Carlson responds, Boston, that foreign stuff shrinks. So this is kind of like how, that's kind of how out of touch he was. And, but the nicest guy, as apparently the actor was by all accounts.
Yep.
And so this is the setup for this.
Yes. And it's Mr. Carlson who comes up with the idea for what he calls the greatest promotion in the history of radio. And it is to drop live turkeys out of a helicopter for needy families. And in this bite, Johnny Fever, was it Howard Hessman?
Yep.
Johnny Fever?
Yep.
Howard Hessman, the station's rock DJ, tosses to button-down news reporter Les Nessman for his live shot. I love how they made the effort to replicate the toss to the remote, you know, the setup beforehand. And really kind of the coolest part is then how Johnny goes into what we call his real radio announcer voice. Give a listen.
Les, you still there?
Yes, Johnny.
You see anything yet? Well, no, there's quite a crowd, though.
We're coming to you right after this record, okay?
Okay, no problem. I can handle it.
Okay, real close. All right, fellow babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So, take it away, Les Nessman.
This is Les Nessman, your man on the scene here at the Pinedale Shopping Center where the excitement is mounting. We're here to witness the big WKRP turkey Thanksgiving giveaway.
Hey, you got permission to be out here?
What?
You're blocking my store here, buddy.
Don't you know who I am?
Huh?
I'm Les Nessman. I won the Buckeye News Hawk Award last year.
Good for you, Buckeye. Now get out of my doorway.
I'm sorry. Creep?
So far, so good, huh?
I'm here with hundreds of people who have gathered to witness what has been described as perhaps the greatest turkey event in Thanksgiving Day history. All we know for sure is that in a very few moments there are going to be a lot of happy people out here. Now, the crowd is... The crowd is, curious, but well-behaved. And I think I hear something now. The crowd is moving out into the parking area. And, oh yes, I can see it now. It's a helicopter. And it's coming this way.
A helicopter?
It's flying something behind it. I can't quite make it out. It's a large banner. And it says, Happy... W-K-R-P. What a sight, ladies and gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. No parachutes yet. Those can't be skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but... Oh, my God, they're turkeys! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes! One just went through the windshield of a parked car! This is terrible.
The running around pushing each other? Oh, my goodness! Oh, the humanity! The turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this anymore. No, I can't go in there.
Children are searching for their mothers and... Oh, not since the Hindenburg tragedy has there been anything like this. I don't know how much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny. The crowd...
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. You just tuned in. The Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkey. Film at 11.
And actor Richard Sanders based that over-the-top performance telling the play-by-play. You never see any actual turkeys in the whole episode.
Nope.
And he based that on Herb Morrison's recounting of the Hindenburg disaster, which we covered in a previous episode. As you heard, Sanders even repeated the iconic "Oh, the humanity" to a huge laugh. But within the universe of the show, as you'd imagine, the whole city of Cincinnati is up in arms over this, including the Humane Society and the mayor. Mayor threatens to call out the National Guard. Here's program director Andy Travis trying to console Mr. Carlson, as I said, this sort of father figure, telling him he had this fantastic feathered failure. And then Les Nessman comes in. He and Mr. Carlson have feathers all over them, which is just a great sight gag.
Yes,
very end of the show. Nessman recounts the events in the shopping center after its transmission cut out, as you heard there. And they do something very special that they don't do anymore that I've seen in shows, where they start rolling the credits before they build up to Mr. Carlson's line, which is the show's most famous. So let's give a listen to that.
It was the most unusual promotion idea I ever heard of. Never been anything else like it.
No, I don't suppose there has.
I thought it would work. I planned this thing right down to the last detail. It was perfect. Where'd you get those birds?
Les, are you okay?
I don't know. A man and his two children tried to kill me. After the turkeys hit the pavement, the crowd kind of scattered, but some of them tried to attack me. I had to jam myself into a phone booth. Then Mr. Carlson had the helicopter land in the middle of the parking lot. I guess he thought he could save the day by turning the rest of the turkeys loose. Gets pretty strange after that.
Oh, it gets strange. Yeah, right. No, no, Les, come on now, tell us the rest.
I really don't know how to describe it. It was like the turkeys mounted a counterattack. It was almost as if they were organized. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
It really is awesome, actually. Really. As insane as that scenario actually sounds, WKRP's creator and head writer, Hugh Wilson, he based it on a real promotion at a Dallas radio station, and it's now the stuff of legend. And he told the Toledo Blade, quote, "Even when I meet people today and I get around to saying who I am, the first damn thing they'll say to me is, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly," end quote.
Yeah, he got the idea, as we said, from a Dallas radio station. They tried the same scheme. The helicopter, the turkeys, the shopping mall, and at no point did anybody say, "Are you crazy?" But until they started having these disastrous results, Hugh Wilson quotes his friend as saying, when he's telling him this story, "Those f***ing turkeys. I think one went through the windshield of a car.
God,
when we saw the terrible damage we had done, we landed the helicopter in the parking lot of the mall and tried to set the turkeys on the ground for people to pick them up, but the turkeys attacked people," unquote.
As for the "as God is my witness" line, that came from Wilson's mom, who he says was always calling on the Almighty that way. And Mr. Carlson's line was the G-rated version of the actual quote, which was profane yet hilarious. Quote, "I'm from Queens, New York. How the f*** would I know turkeys can't fly?"
Get a stereo system for Christmas. Get a turntable, tape deck, speakers, receivers. Get a stereo for Christmas now, because Crazy Eddie's Christmas sale is going on right now. With prices so low, he's practically giving stereos away. Shop around, check all the advertised specials, get the best prices you can find, then go to Crazy Eddie and he'll beat them. So get a stereo for Christmas. Get it now, because Crazy Eddie's Christmas sale is on right now with prices that are insane. Crazy Eddie, now with 10 great locations in Manhattan, the Bronx, Brooklyn, Syosset, Paramus, East Brunswick, Union, Westchester, Westbury.
If you grew up in Queens or elsewhere in the New York area, you remember the ad we just heard extremely well. Crazy Eddie aired that one during that King Kong Monster Marathon we heard earlier, featuring that unhinged performance by, speaking of real radio announcer voices, DJ Jerry Carroll.
God, he was the best.
Promotions have always been a big part of the holidays, with commercials like that one and Crazy Eddie's annual Christmas in August. Yes, he used to be like at the beach with the Christmas tree, and it was just, it really changed advertising. It was a really unique campaign.
Because he was unhinged, and he was, and the camera was always a little too close, you know. It was great.
Yeah, shaking things, throwing things at the camera. I mean, he just went over the top. Now, in McKinley's day, and up to not that long ago, it was considered taboo for stores to start displaying items before Thanksgiving. And that's probably one of the reasons this over-the-top performance, like, well, this guy's nuts, okay? But you expect it from a crazy guy like this. He doesn't even know what day it is.
Yeah, this guy's crazy. So listen, I mean, the store's going to be open, but just so you know, this guy is nuts, okay? So it's not our fault. It's this crazy guy on the TV. So yeah, but please come and buy some stuff. Please buy a top-loading VCR. So anyway, it was sort of like the day for men to remove their straw hats. It triggered the Straw Hat Riots in 1922. I don't know if anyone ever smashed a Christmas display, but you were part of the community in those days, and you know, you didn't want to look like a jerk, you know?
Yeah, the late Tony Snow used to say that he loved Thanksgiving in part because it was our least commercialized holiday. And for me, it's one of the things I don't even think it should be an issue. Here in Bergen County, we have blue laws. You can't shop if you want on a Sunday. And yet people flout those laws. And many of the same people, I'm sure, because I watch them on Facebook, are, you know, really upset about Thanksgiving. It's like, well, it should just be a given. Like, a lot of people sort of try to co-opt these things, I think, a little, which I think is what was bugging me. I couldn't really put my finger on it. But it just seems like it should be so obvious that there shouldn't even be any need for vitriol. There shouldn't be any need for politicians to get on it. Why are retailers encroaching on it? I know that at the meaning of Black Friday, they want to be in the black. But, and I know that I think it was Target that started it, and then Walmart didn't, and then they've, oh, well, now we're at a disadvantage. Now there's something like 10 or 12. I mean, Radio Shack, really? I can't get my candy calculator.
Exactly. Your TRS 80. Early. It's,
and you have online sales. Today's retailers, as I said, they're really encroaching on that. And instead of giving the thanks for all we have, we're running to the stores to get even more, which I cannot imagine. I'm not getting off the couch. I'm committing. I don't use the word hero lightly. You know, I'm not getting off the couch.
No, no, you are a hero, Dean.
If you're lucky enough to have a family and somebody to spend it with, you should be with them.
Well, that's exactly it. And but that's sort of the thing about it too. And you know, yeah, listen, do you run your business, do your thing, you know, make a lot of money, go for it. It's awesome. But it's like, it's just this notion, this avarice that is bled into this thing. And, you know, you've referenced that Tony Snow said, you know, he used to love it because it was the least commercialized holiday. And that's why, I mean, I still love Thanksgiving. And in certain ways, you know, at least it had always been easier to keep it precious in a way that was almost impossible during Christmas because, you know, the pressure was off. You know, you could go and whatever, you know, whatever family garbage got spewed around at the table, that's not going to change, you know. And for some people, holidays and sitting at the table with everyone is just going to be a miserable experience one way or the other. But, I mean, you look at those YouTube videos or every news like show the night of, and people trampling themselves, getting run down. There's you know what it is? Just the utter lack of dignity for everyone involved is seems to be the order of the day with this kind of stuff. And you know what? Yeah, I also know it's hard. I also know, you know, we have to spend our money wisely. And you know, for those of us who have a little bit, it's great. How do you spend it? How do you budget it? It's just kind of a sucky, ugly, cold thing to see this happening in such a way on a day that, you know what? It can be a great day. It can be a great day just to chill out. You know, be with your friends, be with your family, you know, eat stuffing with no onions, with some sausage in it, preferably popovers, you know, and mashed potatoes. Creamed onions, I'll pass right by, hand them to my brother. Dark meat for me, apple cider. But yeah, I don't know, man.
We talked about how hard it was to fight to make this a national day where everybody got together and did the same thing. We don't even have that on election day anymore. We used to all go together, march in and vote. Now we have early voting and, you know, remote voting, which is necessary for some people, certainly if you're serving overseas. That's not even one day. And this was one day, and everything you said was absolutely right. You understand why. You know, people want to sell things. Maybe some people want to work that day. But already the smartphone, they say, has stolen the three-day weekend, right? I mean, you don't disconnect from work anymore. Remember Ralph Cramden? He didn't want a phone and he was so happy because Mr. Greshler from the bus station couldn't call him to work an extra shift. It just adds to the Balkanization. And as a Greek, I don't like the Balkan bashing, but still.
No, you don't. Yeah. But you're right.
There's one day where we all sit and watch football, even if we don't like football. Because there's nothing else to do and nothing else on, just like the cartoons were. And I just think that erodes society and squeezes us all so much. It's just sad. And it reminded me of Crazy Eddie. Now, because Crazy Eddie's stores are all gone, I thought it was a good cautionary tale about this sort of over-the-top shilling for your wares. Because the reason they're not around anymore is because they were a spectacular failure and they defrauded their customers and their stockholders. Tens of millions of dollars. One of the founding brothers, Eddie Antar, cashed out his stock and he fled the country. He ran off to Israel. He eventually landed in a federal prison for 8 years and had to pay a gigantic fine. So let that be a warning to you.
That sentence was insane. Oh, well.
As I said, we're not heroes. We don't use that word lightly.
Everyone else uses it lightly. Oh, hey. Yeah. you went to work in the rain? Look at you. You're a hero.
You know? Let me pin this on.
You did your job the way you were hired to do it. You're a hero.
Yeah. I just feel it should be a given. I just feel why? Who are these people that are trying to change this? Like, why would that even occur to you? It's like
our corporate masters, Dean. Our corporate masters. By the way, the Angry History Show is brought to you by. No, sorry.
It's like I'm going to wake up one morning and decide I'm not. I'm just not going to get out of bed. You know, I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Who was the first person? It's just one of those things where
I've done that
just,
a couple times. And you work on the sick voice. You go, all right, before I call, I'm going to go, I don't know. There was a piece of salmon on the roof of the car for 3 days and I ate it. I'm not feeling well. I can't come in today. Sorry.
I mean, some people have to go.
Right,
of course. We've all worked holidays. We're certainly in the news as you work holidays. You know, somebody always had to go in the animal hospital and, you know, make sure that she now has read and ripped his IV out.
Right.
We've all had those jobs. And that's one thing if it's, as they call it, an essential service now.
Right.
But can't we just have a few minutes? As we said, you know, the Christmas stuff comes out now and the day after Labor Day. It's like, can't we just, why are we in such a rush for everything all the time? And it's just too bad to see it encroaching at Thanksgiving. You know, maybe people are hating this, but, you know.
I don't know. You know what? Then, I don't know. We don't want you to turn it off because we love you. You guys are heroes to us.
We are thankful for all of you heroes.
We are your all heroes.
And as we said, we're not going to shop on Thanksgiving. I guess we're just out of step with this modern world. We will be stuffing our faces with the traditional Thanksgiving spanakopita and pasticho, gift daddies. And
yes.
Wait, you don't eat that? That's not normal.
Sorry. I do eat it. I eat it when I'm at your house.
Yeah, come on over. You know what I cook.
I do.
You've read the cookbook. It reminds me of
eaten the food.
Yes, you have. I've cooked for you.
On both
coasts. For your birthday. I should do that again this year.
You should.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll be home too. After we leave McSorley's for our annual New Year's Eve message.
Yeah, Greek people always think everybody eats that stuff all year round, and they don't really get it.
Right.
And it reminds me of a Tina Fey interview that she did once,
mm-hmm.
and Maria Menounos the same way. It's just things that I kind of pick up on that make me laugh because they don't get it that other people do.
Right.
And she was doing some improv, you know, recently. She said, "Shout out a food to me," and somebody said ham, and she said. She wasn't even deadpanning. This was her honest first reaction off the top of her head, which is what improv is. She said, "Well, ham, we didn't have a lot growing up because to me it was a very white people food." and I just killed me because I thought of Jack Donaghy saying in 30 Rock, "Look, you've grown from an ugly duckling to a vaguely ethnic swan."
I love that line. So great. Well, it's funny. My mom was the Italian side of the family and she was Italian. Dad is Irish. That was always the joke. But mom would always, you know, talk about the great cuisine that we'd have when we'd go to the Irish side's house, and including mayonnaise, the Irish hot sauce, which was pretty good.
Before we leave you to an uncertain future of tryptophan hibernation, we want to give you a final Thanksgiving tradition, Alice's Restaurant, as it's known. The song's full, seldom-used title is what, Owen?
Alice's Restaurant Massacre. And it's an 18-and-a-half-minute comic monologue with a little ragtime guitar under there. You can hear it. And it's retelling an incident that folk singer Arlo Guthrie, son of the great Woodrow Wilson Woody Guthrie. Dean, do you hear that? Woodrow Wilson Woody Guthrie?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I wanted to give him full name credit.
Well, you look at you. This is big. You're ascending. You're ascending. You are evolving beyond your deep-seated rage and hatred, which is good. I appreciate that. Claims to have happened to him on Thanksgiving in 1965.
Yep, Arlo Guthrie and a pal were arrested for the high crime of dumping some trash from, quote, Alice's. It wasn't a restaurant at that time, but a deconsecrated church that Alice and Ray Brock lived in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. They were arrested for dumping this litter and dragged before the man, in hobo terms, in what the officer called a typical case of blind American justice.
And the officer was all set, as Guthrie tells it, to present 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. End quote.
And then the judge showed up with a seeing eye dog.
I love that.
The pair paid $50 a pop and were ordered to clean up the trash.
And this being 1967 and the pretty much entire point of the song, Guthrie tells how he was called up for the draft. And when he reported to the induction center, Lower Manhattan, Whitehall Street, for those of you who know, I think it was 39 Whitehall, he was eventually rejected for military service because of ultimately being a litter bug.
The song first aired live on WBAI in NYC, and over the years became a tradition for many classic rock stations around our great land who would play it in full on Thanksgiving.
Yep. And when Guthrie supposedly found out President Nixon had a copy of the song, the singer said that accounted for the 18-and-a-half-minute gap in the Watergate tapes. I like that. Very funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Yeah. Something else to be thankful for, and we hope you have many such things.
Absolutely.
As you can tell, we're better at being sarcastic than syrupy, but it's sincere that we appreciate it. Every time we look, we get a tweet from somebody who says we're good, from whoever it happens to be, and a lot of really great people.
Yeah.
And it's just great to read that. Great to touch all of you through the wires here and be thankful for you and see the downloads going up and hear that you know I heard from a friend of mine. The fact that people take the time to do that
definitely something we're thankful for.
No, it is. It's great. I am thankful. I tell you, and we say it, you know, to each other privately. I am so thankful for Angry History in so many ways. I mean, not only is it something that I love to do, I love to do it with you. You know, in 20 years of production, I got to say it's probably the most satisfying work I've ever done. So thank you, pal.
Thank you, man. Enjoy your turkey.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'm Owen Mugen.
I'm Dean Karyanis.
And we'll see you guys next time.
All right now.
On The Angry History Show. Bye-bye.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Excepting Alice.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. At Alice's restaurant.
Visit angryhistory.com to learn more about the topics discussed on today's episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or stream it through one of iHeartRadio's many mobile platforms, including their smartphone apps, Roku, or car stereo station. You can also like us on Facebook, tweet us at Angry History, or send an email to angry@angryhistory.com. We'd love to hear your feedback.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.